Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, we'll talk about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as our meal at a new restaurant you may want to try. To do that, I am joined by my co-host this week. She is the owner of Heights Grocer and Montrose Grocer. Mary Clarkson, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Did you listen to the chain restaurant draft? Do you have an opinion?
I mean, I am not surprised and happy that Sarah won. I think that's adorable. Yes.
Yes, she acquitted herself very well.
I like it.
The Waffle House Dairy Queen combo, I think, and Ruth's Chris for Graham, you know, no surprise that the Louisiana boy likes the New Orleans Steakhouse.
Of course.
Was insurmountable. All right. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one. Legendary Houston restaurant Barbecue Inn closed a couple weeks ago after almost 80 years in business. In an interview with the Houston Chronicle, the owners cited their desire to retire and also declining profits as a couple of the reasons that they made that decision. Ironically, the restaurant, although its name Barbecue Inn, was not known for its barbecue. No one who ate at Barbecue Inn with any regularity ate the barbecue. At Barbecue Inn, instead, it was known for dishes like its fried shrimp and fried chicken. Mary, I mean, you're a lifelong Houstonian. Do you have memories of Barbecue Inn?
I do, and I know this one is like wide-reaching because my mom sent it to me. She was like, "They're closing. It's so sad." And you know, it is. That's 80 years is a crazy long run. That's amazing. I'm sad to see a restaurant like this go. Yeah, no, I think a lot of people that have lived in Houston have definitely been to this spot over the years more than once.
Yeah. I mean, I started going there probably 20-ish years ago. I met someone, like I wasn't aware growing up in Sugar Land, it was not a restaurant that was ever on my radar. But when I met someone who grew up in Montrose and we were talking about restaurants that she had grown up going to, it was like, oh yeah, the fried chicken at Barbecue Inn, you got to try it, yada, yada. And so, you know, it became like not a restaurant we went to all the time, but sure, certainly someplace we went occasionally. And I'll admit it's probably been a year or two since my last visit. There's a lot of fried chicken in this town these days, and there's a lot of places that do a very good job. You know, not to cast aspersions on a restaurant that many people loved. In my opinion, the chicken was always extremely crispy. And of course, it was cooked to order, so it was always hot and fresh. Could be a touch under-seasoned for my personal taste. You know, I might like the fried chicken at La Lucha a little more. Of course, it's a little chefier, a little more expensive. You can't beat the atmosphere, right? That down-home, old-school atmosphere. That dining room was probably renovated in the 50s or 60s, and it felt like it. You know, it felt timeless in a way, or retro in its own way. And of course the fried shrimp. I mean, really the fried shrimp were the big winner. And when I learned that you could order a fried chicken dinner and add shrimp a la carte, that was the move, right?
100%.
Give me three pieces of fried chicken and three fried shrimp a la carte. And then, you know, a pie. You know, in the old days, it was from My Didi's. I'm not sure if My Didi's is still around. I think they may have gotten them from Flying Saucer, which is right down the street from there. But, you know, just that whole experience. And trying to go there on, you know, a Thursday or Friday or Saturday, you know, there'd be people waiting. Again, this is 10 years ago, maybe. But it had an enduring popularity. And I know, you know, after the pandemic, people's dining habits changed and it dropped off. And, of course, the rising cost to operate made it difficult for them. Because when you're that well established and you have these customers who've been coming to you for 40, 50, 60 years, it's hard to raise your prices too much because people get upset.
They're sensitive.
About paying,
yeah.
Right. They're very, you know, Gatlin's Fins and Feathers can open down the street with much higher prices and still do a good business. Well, not much higher, but noticeably higher because it's a new restaurant and there's costs associated with that and people understand it. But when you're an existing restaurant, I think it's hard to come up. So obviously, this caused a major freak out, extensive media coverage, lines on the block, lines out the door for the last 3 or 4 days of this restaurant. You know, let me just ask you, as an operator, as someone who is who owns a wine bar and has owned restaurants in the past.
Yes.
Is this something that you would be interested in purchasing? Like, should they try to sell Barbecue Inn to a new operator?
Like, as the existing concept?
Yes. Given the enthusiasm and the upset, the agita about its closing.
Bobby Hugel, where are you? Justin Yu, shout out. You know, I think there are operators in certain cities, like if you take Larry Maguire in Austin, for example, when the owners of Jeffrey's were ready to retire, right? They came to him and they figured out a deal where they could both, you know, honor their name and their history in that neighborhood and have them be a part of that concept going forward. And I think if there's a steward that's willing to do something like this for Barbecue Inn, then that's amazing. And I love that when it happens, because it's a way to preserve history in a way that, you know, so many people, Houston is a very quick to forget town in a lot of ways, not just with hospitality concepts, but also how we treat real estate, right? Older buildings and that kind of thing. You're talking to somebody who has bought an existing business, opened another business, and renovated two houses in the last 4 or 5 years. And it's like, okay, I'm not going to take on any other projects right this second, but, you know, somebody that is a known operator that has the ability to do so, this would be amazing.
Yeah, I did talk to somebody who was sort of exploring the idea of it, you know, sort of intrigued by it. I don't know how serious it was, but, you know, the concern that he had was, well, if the building's grandfathered, if there's code changes that have to be made that didn't have to be made because it was an existing business, you might run into considerable expense trying to bring the place up to code. I don't know how that part of it works, but
yeah, if the use stays the same and it's grandfathered, it lessens the barrier to entry, so to speak. But there's also things as an operator that you might want to do to bring it up to more modern standards that are going to cost you money anyway. So I've never walked to their kitchen or anything like that, but you know, everything in every capacity of our lives is far more expensive than it used to be. And construction is no exception.
Right. But in terms of, you know, that location used to feel kind of obscure, right? Independence Heights, outside the Loop. But now it's down the street from a Whole Foods. So and there's a lot of residential construction in that area, and Garden Oaks is very close. And, you know, there's million-dollar homes in Garden Oaks now. So the idea that preserving this in some way or finding some way to maybe update it just a little bit, but keeping kind of the core of it, I think it'd be a viable option. I'd be sort of curious to see it live on. You know, I think it probably deserves that.
We love nostalgia. So yes, I agree.
All right. Let's move on to topic number two. Underground Creamery and Pudgy's Fine Cookies are opening a second location. They are going to the shopping center in Meyerland near Beechnut and on Beechnut near 610. This will be a little bit of a change for Underground Creamery, which previously has only sold pints to go. But at this new location, they will have soft serve ice cream with toppings that people know from their Underground Creamery pints, like the Oreo MSG, the olive oil from Craft Pita, things like that.
Yum.
Mary, I know you're an Underground fan. Are you a Pudgy's fan?
Yes, I loved it. I am here for this collab. I cannot wait. Seriously, this is a wonderful idea.
No, this has gone, this, you know, these business partnerships can be difficult, but it is a credit to both Josh DeLeon of Underground Creamery and Van Teamer of Pudgy's Fine Cookies that their friendship and business partnership has not only sustained itself through these, I guess, three-ish years of being open on Shepherd, but has thrived and deepened, and to the point where they want to do the second location. I'm excited for all of my, you know, Westbury, Bel Air, Meyerland friends, because I mean, it'll have a limited selection of Underground pints, which are still going to be made in the Heights and packed in the Heights, and the weekly drop that Underground Creamery does, that you still got to go to the Heights to pick that up. You can't get that in Meyerland, but if they have leftovers or they make other flavors that aren't part of the weekly drops, that you might be able to get in Meyerland. Plus the soft serve, which is totally new, and the soft serve flavors won't change. You know, the Underground flavors change weekly, right? Those drops are different every week. Sometimes they're revisited. The soft serve flavors won't change quite that often, but knowing Josh and knowing how creative he is and how much he likes to play around with different toppings and flavor combinations, I'm sure that the Meyerland location won't be slighted for new flavors and new opportunities. I'm also happy because this is a little closer to home for me. It's a little easier to get to Meyerland than it is to get to the Heights, especially with the construction on I-10 right now. So I don't know. Do we have anything? Sorry, I've been rambling a little bit. Do we have anything else to say about this?
No, other than that, we are excited.
All right. And then just briefly, a quick topic number three, because I want to get on to our restaurant conversation, which is to say that Thomas Billy of Belly of the Beast beat Bobby Flay in an episode of Beat Bobby Flay that aired last week. They did a battle of duck and mole negro, a complicated dish and not the sort of thing that people usually make in 45 minutes, but Thomas figured it out. I talked to him. He said he got it down to about half an hour and that he understood that he just had to keep, you know, get the Dutch oven going and then just keep adding things as he chopped, diced, charred, whatever them to bring the flavors together. And the judges basically said that Bobby made a sauce and Thomas made a mole. And there's a limited number of Houston chefs who have won episodes of Beat Bobby Flay. So let me just give them their flowers. Tristan Epps, the Top Chef champion, beat Bobby with the Trinidadian chicken stew. Stanton Bundy, formerly of Traveler's Table, made a chilaquiles that beat Bobby Flay. And our good friend Kevin Nedary of Roost Restaurant in Montrose made cabbage rolls when he beat Bobby Flay. So, Mary, do you have anything to say about Beat Bobby Flay and or Thomas Billy of Belly of the Beast?
I mean, shout out to Belly of the Beast for doing that. I didn't know Bobby Flay allowed people to beat him. Last time I remember him on Iron Chef, meeting him in person, he was very competitive. So I love this.
It is rare for Bobby Flay to lose on Beat Bobby Flay. He has something like a 70% winning percentage. So, yeah, he's very good at, and of course he has the home field advantage, right? Like even if he doesn't know what the dish is until they tell him, still he knows where all the equipment is. He may not know exactly who the judges are, but he knows how to put together flavors quickly. And Mexican flavors are something he's well acquainted with. So. Obviously, for Thomas, you know, the James Beard Award is the headlining thing. Belly of the Beast being a Michelin Bib Gourmand is a pretty big deal. But right behind those, I would guess beating Bobby Flay is pretty good.
100%, no doubt. Not an easy feat, for sure.
All right. I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurant of the week. Stick around. Mary, for our restaurant of the week, I want to talk to you about Angie's Pizza and Bar Angie. This is a new restaurant and its companion cocktail bar from Chef Angelo Emiliani. It is on 11th Street in the Heights, right across from Loro and Trattoria Sofia. Mary, this is a restaurant that we've been waiting for a long time, right? We met Angelo back in 2020. He had just come back to Houston from California. He worked for Chris Bianco in California. He was making pizzas from a wood-fired oven that he towed around with his truck. I remember meeting him at How to Survive on Land and Sea. I remember him doing pop-ups at Eighth Wonder Brewery. I went to a pop-up at his house in the Heights at one point. He did Café Louis with his sister, Luciana, who everybody calls Louie. And then they did Louie's Italian American. I would say both of those restaurants were critically acclaimed, but never quite caught on with the same enthusiasm people had for his pizza. And now he's finally doing the pizza and it is a smash hit. I went there twice last week at 5 o'clock. Both times there was a line out the door. Both times the dining room filled very quickly. And my sense is that it's staying that way. Reservations are very tough to book right now.
This is the hardest reservation to get in town, period. Like,
Well, Sushi Horiuchi is probably the hardest reservation to get in town because there's only six
yeah,
seats and four nights a week or whatever, but
that's
right
not a
behind it,
comparison.
Angie's
Yeah,
Pizzas.
that's a real restaurant for very few people, but a normal sized restaurant, this is the hardest reservation to get.
Yes. All right. So knowing that you're an Angie's Pizza fan and have been for a long time, What do you think of the restaurant?
I always know I'm excited by a place if I'm talking to my mom about it. And I told her that you and I were having dinner together the other night. And afterwards, she was like, ooh, how was it? How was the pizza? And I was like, it's delicious. But like, my mom is going to love this. You and I love this. Children are going to love this. I like a lot of different styles of pizza, but Neapolitan is definitely my go-to favorite, I would say. Like, that's my own personal bias and preference. So take that with a grain of salt, if you will. But it is so good. Everything, I mean, the oven they're using is gorgeous and beautiful. The flour they're using is incredible. The skill and talent of the people preparing the pizza, not just chef, but the people that he's brought with him. He hired one of the chefs that worked with Chris to come here. And he's like, he's as good, if not better than I am. So, you know, the pizza for me is where it begins and ends. Of course, we're going to talk about the other dishes. The homemade pastas are incredible. You and I definitely had some highlights there. But the pizza. So if you're a first-time caller, start with the margarita, right? And then graduate from there. I think I treat all restaurants and bars the same. It's like, I want to try what you're known for first. And if like, I don't love that, then the rest isn't probably going to be great. You're going to be very pleased with the margarita pizza here. And then their riff on pepperoni.
Yeah, the picante with the Spanish chorizo. Ooh. You know, but it starts with the crust, right? I'm not an expert at this stuff. I don't know how long he's fermenting the dough and all of that stuff. But the way that they bake it in that wood-fired oven, it is done to a higher, it's more crispy, it's more caramelized than traditional Neapolitan. This is definitely a pizza you can pick up by hand and eat by hand. You don't need a knife and fork to eat this. That's important because the one thing I have learned is that traditional Neapolitan pizza doesn't seem to resonate with Houstonians. It's a little soft. And so that extra level of doneness, that extra little crispy, makes all the difference in terms of its deliciousness and its popularity. And so,
and there's a technique to eating it that I think you need to talk about as well.
Yes. Well, as Angelo explained, if you just pick it up with your hand, then it'll droop a little bit and the toppings will slide off. If as you're picking it up, you press down in the middle and fold it, then the toppings will stay intact and you can eat it.
It's a bend and snap. You got to bend it. Yeah. You got to fold it in the
middle. You got to just crease it just a little bit like a New York. Like it's much smaller physically than a classic New York slice. It's not foldable in quite the same way, but yes, it folds and that is the proper way to eat it without having the toppings slide off. Yes, I had the margarita. We had the picante with the Spanish chorizo. It is kind of the big kids version of pepper. Like it's their big kid version of a pepperoni pizza, right? It's a little more sophisticated. The flavors are a little more complex, but it still gives you that kind of same dopamine hit.
It is fantastic. And they probably have 6-7 pizzas right now. I have not worked my way through all of them. I've been 3 times. You've been twice. There's definitely, you know, there's definitely layers to a visit at Angie's. You know, you can do your entry one and go from there.
Well, and I think, As much as I like the pizzas and I think the pizza is good, it is the pastas that have really just been so exceptional across both of my visits. That agnolotti that's filled, the kind of Piedmont style agnolotti filled with the Texas Wagyu, the leek tortellini, which just has that bright braised leek flavor, the ricotta gnocchi soft and that kind of sweet and tart tomato sauce. Just every single one is just so satisfying. And it, just like the pizzas, there's 5 pastas on the menu and they're all just bangers. And really, I think that more than anything is we're sort of talking about, well, where does this fit? It's a little more, it's a little more Italian, right, than Cultivare. It's a little more, it's a little tighter than Tiny Champions. So there's a whole lot to like here. And it's, as opposed to a place like Coastline, where it's really the pizza and then maybe also the small plates. I could even see myself going to Angie's and not eating pizza at all, right? Because the...
What? Blasphemy. I can't hear this. This is crazy.
The seafood cocktail is so good. The pastas are so good. That market salad with the tomatoes and cucumbers is so good. I mean, I want to eat the pizza.
I'm beginning or ending with the pizza, period. Like, cannot.
You're always getting pizza.
Correct. Always. Eternally. I dream of it. I literally dream of this pizza. How freaking crazy is that? It's
That is pretty
that
crazy. I don't think I would tell people that. That might be a
What?
little weird.
Well, whatever. Here for this audience's ears. It's that good. This is not a paid endorsement. We paid our own money for that meal.
No,
It was
indeed.
delicious.
Indeed, this is one of those times when I let me just be very explicit. I have been twice and I have paid both times. There has been no favoritism. Not that I need that, not that I expect that, not that anything, but we do try to
No.
be honest about when we're invited or hosted or given a discount. We paid full freight.
I went for friends and family, but yeah, you and I paid full freight, and I'm happy to do so. Like, I literally kept texting one of the main people there and was just like, when are y'all open to the public? Like, please take my money.
All right, and just the only other thing I want to mention is just talk about that wine list because, Renato, their sommelier, handed you this like huge book with wines, and you were drooling over it. So,
Captains, a little captain's list. Yeah.
yeah. So just explain.
Okay, so they have regular by the glass and bottled wines that are fantastic, right? They also have a little leather bound book with handwritten notes, curated by Renato, and there are some bangers on that wine list that are priced, I would almost say, unreasonably good. So yes, some of these wines are 100 plus, 200, 300 plus, but the value and the rarity that they are, this is a treat. So I kind of love a captain's list anywhere, and this is a great list.
All right. And then have you been upstairs to Bar Angie?
I've been once, and this bar is definitely a sexy little bar for the Heights. It's a great addition. I also think it's a great idea to keep people before or after their dining experience that they, Angie's is definitely going to be a spot that's on a wait a lot of times. So if you're trying to kill time before or after, this is a good way to do it. Drew comes from Anvil. As we all know, that's a wonderful training ground for bartenders. And the drink selection here is really great. There are some small bites there, which I think is kind of fun. I haven't gotten into the small bites yet there, but I look forward to that. The room is super tiny. I think it seats 18, if I'm not mistaken. So
Yeah, I think that's right. 16, 18, something like that.
it's small. So obviously, I like intimate bars. I own one that seats 40, and we never really have seated 40 in there. It's more like 20 to 25. So I think this intimate bar trend is something that people really latch onto. You get kind of, a more intimate service-oriented experience, and the mood lighting in here is great. It's really well designed. I like this spot. I think it's a terrific combo to have both in the same block.
Yeah, no, I think, well, not just the same block, the same building.
Yeah, upstairs, downstairs. But yeah, I mean, this is a big corner. They've got a parking lot in the back. It's a big chunk of land they got.
Right. No, but what I think is, especially we went early on a Friday night to Angie's, and of course it's, a lot of grown-ups having dinner with grown-ups, but also a decent number of families with children, which is fine. It's a pizzeria, like that's not out of bounds or anything. But if you want that more adult experience, either before dinner or after dinner, it's good to know that Bar Angie is right there because you can go upstairs and you can have those cocktails that are a little more complex, a little more layered, because they don't really have to go with the food, right? They don't. They can be a little more ambitious in their
Sure.
presentation and in their flavor combinations, and it is darker and more intimate and a little more personal, and I like all of those things about it. And, thinking about kind of what's around it, I went from Bar Angie to Bar Daphne at the Hotel Daphne, which is another like kind of small cocktail bar with like cool art on the walls and like a nice atmosphere. And so you can kind of have that, you can have that experience, and it's a good companion to the more casual environment of Angie's, I think, is to go upstairs to that bar and have a drink either before or after dinner and kind of ease into the experience.
Yes, I love that it feels like a completely different space than the restaurant too. So you're getting two complete experiences thought through from the beginning to the end. I really like both of these. I'm excited for them.
All right. one last thing to discuss, right? You said you think Angie's is the best version of this style of pizza in America, in Texas, in Houston. Where are you calling your shot, Mary Clarkson?
Oh my God. It's certainly Houston and Texas for me, like no doubt. I love New York. There's so many pizza spots I love in New York. So, but they're, you know, totally different styles. Yeah, this is up there for me. Like it's certainly my favorite pizza in Texas.
Over Bufalina, over.
Yeah, over Bufalina, which I can't believe.
San Antonio over.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was an early goer to Dough in San Antonio. Like when it first opened, I was like, wow, this is different. Right. And I love Bufalina. Like if I'm anywhere in the vicinity of Austin, that is my jam. This for me. Yeah, no, this is better than Bufalina. I can't believe I'm saying that. Yeah, it is for me.
Okay. I mean, I want to let it dial in. I want to let it settle in just a little bit. And also it kind of reiterated for me that I think Coastline does a really good job with these wood-fired pizzas. So I think Angie's probably a little more creative, like a little less traditional, but
yeah,
I mean, I think what Angie's is doing is really, I think what Angie's is doing is really outstanding, and I'm delighted and I'm happy to have more, you know, good quality wood-fired pizza in Houston. I think we all win when something like that happens.
Absolutely. It raises the bar for everybody. A little competition never hurt anybody. And if everybody gets better because of it, I am here for it.
All right. There it is. Mary Clarkson, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guest will be the guys from Eastbound Barbecue.